Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for May 31st, 2017, our last day in May. Nice, nice. We have four folks here right now, although I hear that Joe and Benoit might be joining us. We have Andy, Sylvan, and Theo here. Awesome. Good group. If Joe gets here, I think we could bounce over and talk about that RFC of his a little, Sylvan, but
yeah.
Without him here, I don't see much point of that.
Okay.
I haven't had time to do the thing that I often do, which is to go look at pull requests and issues. So let's give me a moment here. I'm going to start with pull requests. Oh, hey, here's one. Let's start with 1934. It's from Benoit. Only generate internal methods when needed. I like the sound of that.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah. This is both a wise change and a change that makes the code read nicer.
Nice. Joe said yes. Any reason to hold off on merging, or should we?
Looks good to me.
All right. Rebase and merge. Boom. There we go. One down. Here we got C1927. Is this all fixed up for that? Theo, is the stuff in 1927 that now conforms to the forthcoming style guide, right? That is in the style guide, those? I seem to remember them as being. Yes?
Yeah, everything looks good to me.
Do you see anything incorrect in this, Sylvan? It looked good to me. The test passes, and it looked like it was a reasonable test.
Why does this say if X is I-128?
Wait, what did I miss? Where? Oh, that's an addition.
I think maybe people have...
I missed that.
...been changing this code in a way that does not actually work at all.
Well, hold on. Yes, that was
earlier too to this code.
Yes, there is.
Do not work.
Yeah,
someone has made changes over time, and fun int no longer works in format.pony, and will never format 128-bit numbers correctly. All that does is it says if X is zero.
It looks like, well, the last change to that was 8 months ago in the string formatting RFC that Theo did. Let's see. And...
Now, this could be done with a if type.
Oh yes, this was new code that Theo added in like 8 months ago.
It's my fault because I didn't see. But that needs to be done with if type in order to work.
Where is this that you're looking?
Sorry, in format.pony.
The
line 95 and 97. I think
95.
That's looking.
Oh, I see. Yeah. That's not right.
Yeah, I think that's looking as if that were a type check, but it's not a type check.
Yeah, that is. Oh, dear.
Yeah. It's too bad because this, I think this has happened more than once. to people. And I wish we had some nice way to catch that, but I can't think of a nice way to catch that because it's just a constructor. And actually, I use that exact pattern when I do things like if X is none for things that are union type. So it's not...
It's is type, right?
Sorry?
It's is type, right? Is that what it is?
The way to do this is with if type.
If... Right.
Or we could just do a match expression.
We could, but actually, in this case, we would get... we would resolve it statically with an if type. So we can say if type A is a subtype of U128, in other words, if it's U128, then we continue.
Yeah, but would you be able to send it to format int.U128 as a U128 without a capture?
Yes, because you'll note that X actually has that type.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. In fact, we also have the change for the elsif in there, I believe, right now. Just trying real quick to see if that goes. Yeah, if type works quite nicely there and would make that static, which is really cool, actually.
I can't believe I missed that.
I'm just going to post that in the Slack real quick just so that it's there.
Hey, guys, what are we using if type for?
Hey, in... PR 1927, I noticed that it has a change to format.pony right at the bottom, and it's to add a new, what they thought, this lovely person thought was a type check based on some previous code we had in there, but it's not a type check, that's just an is versus a constructor on a, so it's just saying if X is zero over and over again, basically. Whereas okay. If you do it with if type, it will be beautiful.
Yeah, something I was actually thinking about, like while you're typing that up, in if with if type, I was thinking about collections and like making them stringable, even in situations where the I've been working on a few collection types for a CRDT library.
That interests me greatly.
And basically, what I did was I made them stringable always, but if type A is subtype of stringable, then I can actually show the values, and if not, I just was using like question marks. So if it was like a collection of three elements that were not stringable, then you would just see three question marks. Otherwise, you would see the three. String representations of them in that sequence.
That's really nice. I like that. That's really cool.
Because then you can do things like, I mean, for example, in Pony Test, to be able to assert equal, you have to have it be stringable and equatable.
Right. And then all of a sudden, collections of stringable things are themselves stringable, and that's really nice.
Yeah,
it seems like there's a bunch of really cool things we can do with if type, actually.
Yeah, I was doing some interesting stuff with it while working on the parser and like the static data structures for the AST. And if type turns out to be a really useful tool in a place where I didn't expect.
Coolio.
Yeah, I look forward to getting into our code base. It'd be nice. All right. So
go ahead. Sorry. Never mind.
Nope. Keep going, Joe.
I changed my mind about bringing it up.
Okay. All right. So I left a comment on that. Good catch, Sylvan. Yay. Right. It's fun because that goes all the way back 8 months.
Oof.
Yep. Oh, good times. Good times. So I left a note asking if they could update to using F-type. So I'm going to say let's jump over like we talked about before Joe got here and talk about RFC 90. Joe, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the sync call from last week where we talked extensively actually about things that were at least tangentially related to this RFC, or if you had a chance to check out any of the comments that were on it where we tried to summarize some of it.
Yeah, I did. I read the comments and I also listened to the call. I think that's a great solution for a lot of what that RFC was trying to address, and maybe that's enough. But a couple of things, I remember there were a couple of things. I'm only recalling one of them right now. One of the things that the RFC included that would not encompass would be, for example, the RFC included like a provision for the pieces of the concatenated string could be stringable rather than actually being string, which was kind of a nice thing, although maybe that was controversial to start with. I don't know.
So I think that's totally fine. And in fact, something that I thought we should consider is actually changing the add method of a string to take a stringable box.
Right. Yeah,
inside we can say, you know, if it's a string, then we don't have to go and convert it into a string. We just go crazy, and if not, we convert it to string and continue.
Yeah. So here's the problem with that:
is you can't lead with a stringable. You'd have to have a string first.
Yeah, I mean that's not necessarily the biggest problem. The biggest problem I'm thinking of right now is that the interface for stringable is a string method that returns string ISO, which kind of annoys me sometimes for its own reasons. But the problem with this is that, for example, if you had like let's say we made it so that string dot add, or I guess we're talking about dot append, right? No, we're still talking about add. It would have to be add and append if we're talking about doing the little code gen hack. But let's say for the sake, we ignore the code gen hack and just talk about making string.add take a stringable. Then it would get the string in as a stringable, and it would call string.string, and it would return the string, right?
No, because you first just type check. You'd first just pattern match and check if it's a string. And if it's a string, you do nothing. You don't call dot string. You just do the normal append.
Okay, this is a code gen hack that we're talking about, though, right?
No, I'm just saying change add.
Okay, to do a match first.
Yeah.
Okay, is that match cost okay in this circumstance?
Yeah, I mean it would just be checking. It would be one. It would be a vtable dereference and an integer comparison.
Yeah, I just know that sometimes we wanted to avoid match costs in the past. So anyway, yeah, I mean, that seems reasonable to me. If it seems reasonable to Sean, Sean would probably be the one
am I the performance expert now?
You are the person most likely to complain about performance regressions.
I have a thing to say here. We can do it with a dynamic check right now, and when we have generic inference,
right,
we can make add a polymorphic method over some type A that is stringable, and if type A is string, then we append it. Otherwise, we call string, and then we don't have the cost at runtime. We have no dynamic check.
Yeah, definitely. So maybe that change could just wait until, I don't know. It could probably just wait until we have the generic inference and then just do it then. Because sure. I don't think anyone's really clamoring for it right now. And I would rather wait to add the new feature when we have generic inference rather than.
That makes sense.
I don't know. But yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And so the other thing I was thinking about that the RFC included was being able to use the concatenation syntax to split a string literal over several lines and have that be like magically turned into a single string literal that returned as a string vowel.
We could do that with plus as well.
You think so? You think we could go ahead.
Because we could see that they were constant strings. At CodeGen time, when we see that add, we can say, oh, you're adding two constant strings. Screw this. I'll just create a new constant string right now. Oh, look, you added another one. Well, I'll create another constant string. So, yeah, we could do that at CodeGen too. That's
okay.
Really good.
Yeah, so that makes sense. I guess the only thing is that, like, I guess, let's see, for ISO, anywhere where you can use an ISO, or sorry, anywhere where you could use a vowel, an ISO could also be used. So, an ISO ephemeral, that is what we're talking about. So, yeah, I guess that doesn't break type checking if we can, if we can detect that a vowel is acceptable in that location, then we can drop it to vowel. Cause that's kind of what I'm worried about is right. Like we want to be able to have,
I'm sorry, I'm confused. I thought you meant, so do you mean creating it and the concatenation would yield in a string ISO hat? I was thinking it would just be plus and it would yield a string vowel. Maybe I misunderstood that.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, in the RFC, I was talking about it yielding a string ISO hat under normal circumstances unless all of the operands were literals, in which case it would yield a vowel, which is a little bit inconsistent, but useful, it seems like. So, yeah, I guess the question is, if you're talking about it just using the string dot add method signature and having it always yield a vowel.
Well, you know, interestingly, there's really no reason string.add should return a right. string vowel. It could return a string ISO hat.
Yeah, because you're always allocating a new string.
Always.
Yeah, so...
So then
I guess maybe... Go ahead.
But then the compiler can, the only issue there is then is adding two literals. I see now exactly what you're talking about. Cause if we change that to add to being string ISO hat for string.add, then adding two literals yields a string ISO, which means you can mutate it, which means we can't, build it once at compile time.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
On the other hand, if I can ever get Luke to merge his changes, we'll have hash expressions, compile time expressions. And so then you could easily say hash and then add a bunch of string literals and you would get a compile time string vowel out of that anyway. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Well, yeah. So one reason why I think it's compelling to have the plus return ISO hat is that the stringable interface is string ISO.
Indeed.
And I'm wondering, I don't know,
Okay, I see two possible approaches here off the top of my head. There's, I'm sure, many more, but off the top of my head. One is to change stringable.string to return a string val.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but I don't know. It would let types cache the string that represents them, for example.
Which you yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a catch-22, right? Like you're either making extra demands of the caller or making extra demands of the callee.
Yeah.
Depending on which you choose.
The other thing is right now it would be very difficult to create a situation where you can cache it because you would have to do it up front on type creation because that's a fun box. So you're not allowed to mutate it when you create that new string.
Yeah.
Get it. You got to allocate one.
Although I don't want to digress too much, but at one point Benoit and I were discussing in IRC whether it would make sense to have some kind of optimization where we could mark something with like a compiler annotation to be cached, and if the receiver was Val, and it. For example, like a trivial case would be if the receiver's Val and it takes no arguments, then it could be marked to be like cached somewhere in like memory. It's kind of a pie in the sky thing right now, but yeah,
that's very true. Memoization is
right.
The sort of general PL term. Memoization is often tried and rarely helps.
Yeah.
It turns out that kind of memory pressure is, and looking things up, is this cached, that kind of stuff, is problematic.
But the 5% of the time when it's useful, damn, it's useful.
Very true. Those times, perhaps, we should write our own memoization stuff instead of making the language do it.
Yeah, I'm not trying to push that too much. Anyway, so coming back to the, I've often wondered actually whether stringable should be like I don't know the ideal solution, but maybe like a union type where you can, like a stringable is, stringable val or like where val is like part of the type name, or stringable ISO where ISO is part of the type name, like so such that each one of those would have a different interface, and you can you can choose to implement either one, and then anything that is looking for stringable
But what type does it get? All it would know is it would got a string ISO hat or a string val, and it wouldn't be able to disambiguate, and so that's a string val,
right? It would have to drop it to val, right? Unless you chose string ISO because you needed it.
Yeah,
it gets kind of weird.
Yeah.
So here's the other idea I was thinking of a stringable returning thing like, I don't know, printable, where it takes a string ISO as the argument.
Uh-huh.
Appends whatever it needs to into that string ISO. Like push and append whatever you need in there. And then it also returns the string ISO. And also you could have the argument could have a default value of a new string ISO. Right. Such that you can use it like the current stringable method but you could also use it where you're just pushing into a string that you already allocated of a certain buffer size.
Yeah, I think that's fine. No problem with that. I mean, other than figuring out the right name for it, but yeah. I think that's a good interface to have, but
right. And like when to implement that and the other one, like, I don't know. It's a little bit weird of like when you should use each one, I think.
Yeah. I think yeah, because that would let stringable be string that that returns a string val, and it would be straightforward. Yeah, that's very interesting.
Right.
And in fact, you could, if you wanted to, you could even implement string in terms of that, where it just says call print, but with nothing, no arguments, and then that's fine. Just treat it as a val. We're done.
Right. Yeah. Like that could be. Like maybe like stringable could be an interface with a default implementation of the string method, and then it calls print internally and it assumes you implement print.
Again,
the naming is kind of weird, but
I don't know if print is right or string is right. I don't know. I think that's pretty good. So I think if we're on the right track here, I think it's that. Yes, look at widening what can be added to a string, but do it later.
Yep.
Yes, do special case string concatenation at codegen and treat it as if it were, so that semantically it does exactly what it does now, but under the hood, we skip all the extra allocations.
Right. And then later on, when we broaden what can be passed to string.add and try to figure out whether string.add I guess string.add already returns a val. So, so we can deal with that later. If we want to expand it to ISO, we can deal with it later.
Right.
The case of when to use a compiled time literal, and maybe then by then we'll have loop stuff merged and we'll have a different way of approaching that.
Yep.
Okay, so I think that's a good general path forward.
Cool. Awesome.
So in that case, what I'll probably do is add a little comment later today discussing what we discussed now, and probably just close the RFC because that compiler optimization can be done without an RFC because it doesn't change anything about the semantics.
Cool.
And then we'll just have to, add something like to the tutorial about that this is an efficient way to do it, or like amend the pony pattern or whatever.
Cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Sounds great. That's great. All right, we're basically at the halfway point. This is when we always stop and check to see if anybody has anything that they want to bring up. Benoit, it's been a while since I've been in the same one with you. That's awesome. Good to see you. We also have a new person here who feel free to say hello if you want to, or continue working, lurking in the background. Does anybody have anything they want to bring up?
I have 1931.
1931. Issue?
Issue. So it's like an unsoundness with generics again. So the idea here is that it lets you instantiate types by giving them like an ephemeral type argument. And then because the body isn't type checked to work with ephemeral types, it's able to create a stable ephemeral reference.
Oh, that's horrifying.
And so then you can like alias that.
Wait a minute. The body isn't type checked as if that had an ephemeral type?
Sorry?
Oh, look at that.
Did you crack open code and that's what you're saying? Look at that, or are you just looking at the example program in the issue, Sylvan?
Both, actually.
All right.
Particularly when checking subtype binding. I think we should not accept
ephemerals
as type arguments.
I don't. Why would you want to?
So well, that's what I was thinking.
The only reason I can think of that is that you might want to accept the ephemeral of a type parameter as a type argument.
Wait, what?
If you look at the very bottom of the issue, there's two links.
Mm-hmm. There we go. The ephemeral of a type argument, exactly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So we have use cases for the for passing like the ephemeral of a type argument, but aren't we like not allowed to pass? Are we not allowed to append like a capability onto a type argument? It seems a little weird to me that you can do like a hat, but not like a val or a iso.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I want to do is to allow a iso.
Yeah, I like that too because that made my life so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because sometimes you're using type parameters in a way where you want like the complete like type with cap and ephemeral, and other times you're using it in such a way where you want them to provide only like the base type, and then in other places you want to be able to say like this is an A iso or an A val or whatever, and just have it be. Like if you pass in string, those are places where you would just like replace the cap with whatever it is you chose.
Yep. Yeah.
So how about that? Probably saying no, you can't do that seems like a bad idea, actually.
Yeah.
But then it would break if you have like iterator of a string iso hat, which is like something you could have.
Indeed. Very, very true.
Would it make sense to do something like a viewpoint over the like to do some a viewpoint of something like something arrow A where we're currently doing a hat?
No, unfortunately. Because what we mean is something that can be assigned to A without being consumed is specifically what we mean there. Problem is that body is allowing and we don't want to type check all.
So the thing is here we assume that X is only ever going to have a stable capability, whereas it could be an ephemeral one. And so what we could do is don't do that and assume that X could have anything, even ephemeral, but then you're going to break a lot of code.
Yeah, that's going to go to hell really quickly.
But so then if you put a constraint any on there and you say any only accepts ephemerals, no, any only accepts stable references, but
yeah, it's almost like we need to put a hat on the type parameter constraint.
actually, wait a minute here.
That is allowed, hats on constraints.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this will work with the simple approach. That you say. I think we can specifically reject let me think. Okay. Walk through this with me and see if there's a problem. If we go with the simple approach here of saying that any and send don't accept ISO hat or trend hat, but it's okay for them to accept, for example, any hat. But that any hat itself could have accepted an ISO. Does that get us into an issue, or is that simply an unfulfillable type, and so it's okay?
Wait, can you say again?
So I'm taking as an example iterator cycle.pony.
Yeah.
Uses a hat.
Mm-hmm.
If we say that hash any does not accept ISO hat or trend hat.
Yeah.
But it does accept type parameter hat. Then, for example, in cycle, if we add an iterator over string ISO, we could generate a cycle over string ISO. But we could never pass it an iterator over string ISO hat, because how would we build one? Because that's an unfulfillable type.
Yeah.
Well, so does that break down?
Is, so you have hash any, which does not accept any ephemeral thing, whether it's a hat or ISO hat. And then you also have another one. So let's say any, like, not any hat, but like some special any that accepts both ephemerals and stable ones.
You just put a hat on it, right?
Yeah, okay. That so maybe. The any hat accepts both the ISO hat and the ISO. And then in the definition of iterator, we would use the hat version of any. But in the examples,
I don't think that works for iterator, actually. Does it work? Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe it does work.
Well, because iterator only uses it in the return position.
It would work.
It would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm agreeing with Paul here. Like, we need a way to designate in the type parameter that I want this body to be type checked for cases including ephemerals. And then by default, it would not. But then you would say, in this case, I do want to accept ephemerals. And then that would be just part of the constraint definition.
Yeah.
That seems like it's going to get confusing.
As generics already are.
One problem with this is that hash any or hash any hat does not accept tuples, so you would not be able to make an iterator of tuples, but that's kind of a different problem. But.
Yeah, it's the same problem. Like, I can create an array of tuples, but I can't do a persistent list of tuples because the constraint is any share.
Yeah.
Yep.
And tuples, yeah, it can't get fit into any constraint that I can express without actually making it have the cardinality of the tuple.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that comes back to, we should probably at some point make tuples object types.
Yeah.
As we keep talking about. But in order to do that and keep a lot of the efficiency that tuples give us, particularly for things like multiple results. We would need a separate way to talk about pass by value versus pass by reference.
Well, I get why matching on a tuple without using the cardinality would require it to be an object, but I don't get why using a tuple as a type parameter requires it to be an object.
Well, that's an interesting point. Right now, it's because a tuple is not a subtype of any interface because it's not an object.
Right, it's because any is not, because we're using, as I remember, we're using any as just an interface that's empty. Rather than being a special like compiler construct, and maybe that's the problem.
Yep, you could special case it.
You mean it would? Wait, what? What's the special case?
Any would not just be an empty interface. It would also be like it would just specify it could be any type at all, including tuples.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that's what I thought. I wanted to make sure that I understood that correctly. Otherwise, who knows what bizarre thing I might have ended up thinking.
But you still couldn't use any to match, you still couldn't, like, do a match expression of type any and have one of the case expressions be a tuple.
Not currently.
It could be fine. We could just disallow that.
Although, well, at that point, it would have been boxed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can't assign it. You can't assign a tuple to type any.
Well, funnily enough, you could. Because it would be the same as if you assigned it to a tuple type or none. Right? The way we do that is we box the tuple. And it becomes an object type.
Right. Okay.
And once it's become an object type, hey, look at all that object type goodness that it has. So I think making it special casing any and allowing, in fact, it wouldn't even have to necessarily be any. We could be a little bit more clever about that and say that a tuple is a subtype of an empty structural type, which happens to include any. Including for assignment.
The other option would be to allow compiler constraints to omit the type any and just do like a cap only. Like you would just have like A is constrained by hash read.
You could, but I'm sort of okay with writing any read. That's
okay.
That seems like I don't want to introduce special syntax for that unless we find that that's really helpful. I think we could make tuple subtypes of empty structural types across the board, and it would work across the board. That's very interesting.
Okay, so then winding our way back to the original
the issue topic. Being capabilities. The issue is the capability on it, in the sense that we would need to
think discussed this last time. The capability of a tuple would be whatever is the most specific capability that whose viewpoint adaptation table included all of the element types within the tuple. Sorry, the element caps within the tuple. Does that make sense? Like if I have a tuple where all the elements are either val or tag, then that tuple can be a val because that's the most specific capability that includes val and tag in its adaptation table.
Yep. Yeah. Such that if you have yeah. So if you pattern match on any box that you had assigned a tuple of string ref to, you could pattern match on string box and succeed.
That's right. Complex. So yeah, your tuple of string ref would be a subtype of tuple string box, a subtype of tuple any box, any ref, or even the singular type any ref or any box.
Yeah. Ooh, that's complex. Okay. Pushing that back just a little bit and popping back to 1931. I think that I think a scheme that says that it's okay to pass a type, an ephemeral type parameter doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Even in cases where the type parameter constraint explicitly allows for it?
No, I mean, if we don't, without building that in.
Okay, got it.
But I think trying to explicitly allow for it is going to get pretty horrifying. For example, the distinction for read element is just ugh. It's terrible. And I think is this a field problem only?
Pretty much, because in return types, it's fine to have ephemerals, and in arguments, if you have an ephemeral, you just won't be able to.
You just won't be able to fill.
No, because just like I'm able to assign to an ephemeral.
Exactly.
I would be able to pass in as an argument to another function. So it's the same problem with argument types.
Same problem with argument types?
Yeah.
Is there? I don't think so. Because it would say it requires an AISO hat, and you name it when you pass it in. You could never fulfill it. It's a field problem, isn't it?
No, because in the so the cell class, if I had another method that had a that had an argument of type X, I would be able to give it as an argument recover x.default, and the same way I'm able to assign that to the field.
You couldn't. I don't think so.
Why not?
You mean?
So the recover expression has type X hat.
Indeed.
And so if your function expects X, then you can give it that expression X hat.
Except later it turns out that X is already an ISO hat.
Right, but it's entirely the... I see. So we have something. So you're talking... Because you'd have to have a call site. So do you mean as a default argument or something like that?
No.
Can you write one for me? I'm sorry. If not, that's totally fine.
Give me a second.
Because I think any argument is going to then demand an LMISO, XISO hat, and you can't provide an XISO hat.
Yeah.
Please, let me think about that.
Well, the thing is, inside the cell class, you don't know that X is an ISO hat.
So you can't alias that into an ISO.
That makes any sense.
Indeed. Because there's just no way to pass an ISO hat as an argument, right? Because you've named it.
Yeah. But the same way, there's no way to assign to an ISO hat field.
But and there yet, is here because we haven't type checked it that way.
Yeah.
So the whole, but with arguments, you've got to provide one. So I think it's just a field problem. Am I crazy?
I don't really understand what you mean by it's just a field problem.
If we had rejected ephemeral bindings on type parameters that were used as field types,
okay.
Only, and accepted it for type parameters that were not used as field types.
Yeah,
I think it would work.
Okay, I'll try to think about it. The problem from that is that then the signature doesn't tell you whether you have a field or not anymore.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, I'm not saying that that's necessarily the thing that we use to discriminate. Maybe it is. But I think it's interesting that that's why iterator is okay. That's why read element is okay.
I think these are okay because it's only in return position. I'll try to think about the case where it's a problem in arguments.
Okay, cool.
I can't right now, but I'll try to.
Yeah, because if I'm missing something, then that would suck.
In general, I think it's okay if it's only return position.
I think it's okay on an argument position because of the binding. That you, there's just no way to provide one.
Yeah.
Right, okay. It's an unfulfillable type.
Yeah, so if we find that it is only a field problem, I think I agree with Paul that it's still weird, you know, if we were to use that to discriminate between how we're treating and like what we're accepting in the type arguments, it's a little bit weird that, like, I mean, I know that adding more notation to type parameters could be confusing, but I think it's also just a different kind of confusing if the meaning of your constraint changes based on how you're using it in the body.
Yes. I agree with that. It would be simpler to say that, for example, that we treat it differently between a class versus a trait or an interface. But then if we ever turn fields into something that can go into traits and interfaces because they're properties, then that distinction would go away and we'd be back to square one.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the extra complexity of adding, like, an any hat could be workable if basically, because what we would do right now, like, any hat would act how any is acting currently, right? Except it would be also type checking. But it would be allowing the same domain of usage that hash any is currently allowing. So what we would do is, add the type checking so that then also, you know, like add the any hat and such, so that like we would basically be breaking people's code who are currently using hash any in the wrong way, and upon doing so we could provide a compiler hint, hey, you should be using hash any hat, and then this would work.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. This is a super good find, Paul.
Well, so then there's one more thing, which is in the case where X doesn't have any constraint, which is the second example in my issue. And if it doesn't have a constraint at the moment, it means that X has to be a subtype of X.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much always true. So in that case, would that allow ephemerals? Should make this allow ephemerals?
I mean, my perspective on that is if we fix the tuple problem, then we can, you know, we can make the implicit constraint be hash any, any hash any, and then disallow self-referential like type parameter constraints.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Although I guess some type parameter constraints are going to need to be self-referential through a type argument. Like for example, X is constrained to be a subtype of like equatable X. Would that be a problem with the hat problem that we're talking about?
No, because it'd be equatable any or equatable any hash.
Okay, so yeah, I see what you're saying.
You'd have a capability there.
Okay. So that seems like it would be fine if we did all that.
Yeah. But we can say that XX, like X bound by X, is the equivalent of any hat. Like, still allow it, but say it's the equivalent of any hat, so the most permissive thing.
But right.
Then X on its own is any.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's a good solution overall. So it does require fixing the tuples to be objects, or subtype of any, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't need them to actually be objects, though, right?
No, we don't.
Just a special hack for empty structural interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
And that means we need to introduce some boxing if you try to like assign a tuple to an any, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I suspect that that won't even, as long as the subtype stuff is taken care of, that's exactly what the code generator will do for you already.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because it'll say, "Oh, is this going to an object type? Oops, box it."
Cool.
That's very interesting. It'll be very complicated to think about pattern matching for this, though.
Indeed. Did anybody else have anything they wanted to bring up?
Yes, I just have a quick question for. So I've started working on a separate compilation, and wow. I figured out I need to implement serialization of AST of the AST and the reachability map. So I wanted to make sure nobody was already working on something like this before starting to implement stuff.
I'm definitely not. That's extremely interesting. I'm not working on that, and there have been bits and pieces of serializable AST over time. I think there was an AST loader at one point in the code. I'm not even sure it's still there anymore. But whatever it is, you can ditch it because it isn't used.
Okay, cool. So I see what I'll come up with.
Yeah. Cool.
I have two.
I was definitely, I'm not working on anything like that at the time, but yeah, that's something that I would be interested in. And also, I'm just like, as a quick announcement, I've got the Pony parser and Pony basically up and running, and also parsing and transforming the sort of dynamically typed trees into statically typed structures. So I'm sort of at a point now where I can start actually digging into rewriting the syntax pass in Pony and start working my way through the compiler passes one by one. So
that's awesome.
So in terms of, if you're talking about serializable AST, that's something that I would be interested in sort of talking with you about a little bit, and just sort of figuring out how we can make this Pony compiler and Pony be interoperable with the C version of it in terms of serializable AST.
Very cool. Okay. So maybe I'll put an RFC on this, so we can discuss all the details.
Perfect.
I think it doesn't necessarily need to be an RFC if you don't want it to be. It could just be like, I don't know, just kind of keep keep either me apprised, or just like add, you know, somewhere, I don't know, in the Slack channel, just kind of, if you want to drop, kind of what, like what you're looking at, and I can look it over and give feedback or whatever. I don't know if it necessarily needs to go through the RFC process if you don't want it to, but I just wanted to be kind of like in the loop on that and be thinking about how I would implement it in Pony.
That's a good point. You certainly don't have to. That's a really good point.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. So I have a quick one. This is for Benoit. Benoit, issue 1186. A while back in January, you said you'd forgotten you were going to open a bug report on the LLVM tracker. If you did do that, could you drop it? Could you drop a link to that on 1186?
Yeah, I didn't do it. So yeah, I really need to think about that. I'll try to think about it this week. And I'll put the link once I've opened the report.
Awesome, thank you.
Okay, sweet. If nobody else has anything, we're about 7 minutes over, so I would say we call it for now, and we can get to anything else that's left, of which there's always stuff next time.
Excellent.
Theo, Andy, anything?
Nope.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, everyone, for coming, and I'll see y'all next week.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.